opportunities, but they can nurse each other. Much talk about it for many, many years, hopes expressed.
Well, you know,
with the exception of heat. when they say coexistence, it means if you live as we want you to live, then we will coexist.
Yeah, but they say their coexistence means, I mean, you well put it, coexistence to us, you live your way, we live our way. They say coexistence, they mean you live your way, but inside of us. So, well, anyway, coming to statements. to have done it deliberately, even if they had intended to do it. So, there it is. And frankly, let me say, we understand. I know Henry said you were disturbed about some resolution in the UN. This was not actually, we were busy with the POW thing yesterday, and it did not come to my desk. What we could have done would have had the, or at least tried to amend the resolution, to have the investigation first. I mean, you don't start condemning somebody, you
yes, first you condemn.
But let me say, it's just one of those things. I'm sorry that it caused it, we did not, it was not a policy at our level.
We put it under the misapprehension that it had to be moved out of a few people.
Well, you're, apparently there was some feeling, that, let's be quite candid, Scout is a new man, a good man. He cleared everything with us here as well as the State Department. What had happened, had a conversation with your ambassador to the UN, and got the impression that it was all right.
It was a misunderstanding when I spoke to Tagola this morning.
Yeah.
But,
let us understand.
Yes,
well, we expressed it so when it's right, you said, well, of course, but so that there's no embarrassment to you as far as we're concerned. We obviously have to indicate an interest in it because of the interest that's been raised here. So now we've done it.
The president, yes.
Okay.
No matter what happens at the UN, I want you to know exactly. During the month of January, from warnings that Black September is planning now is something very dramatic, and that is to have a plane with explosives, with men who are prepared to commit suicide, and drop it either at some very important military installation, preferably in a city like Tel Aviv or Beersheba down south, or something like that.
You mean just crash it?
Yes.
Like a half kamikaze. Yeah.
Now, since in love, we had Japanese come in who were prepared to commit suicide and just shoot everybody in sight.
Those crazy fools, yeah.
You see, we had to consider that seriously. And it's in that context that one must understand it.
Sure.
And Mr. President, I'm interested above all that you would know the. If had anyone of the people there had any doubt whether there are passengers in the plane, believe us, no matter what would have happened, we wouldn't have done it. And our chief of staff, when asked, well, do you think you should have tried to bring the plane down on its way out? He said, a passenger plane. He said, even on the way in, even if they were coming into the country, we wouldn't have done it. And nobody, I believe, in the world was full of so much sorrow.
Let me say this, we understand, I follow it all, the main concern we have, as I explained to Henry, as he passed to the ambassador, was we don't want your position, I mean, Israel's position in the world, you have your statement, and then, I thought that was a very, very intelligent to suggest that you would, on humanitarian grounds, be helpful to those who need to have been injured and so forth. Now, what I would say is this: if this happened when we were, example, when we were bombing the military targets in North Vietnam, the hospital was in. Well, we didn't intend actually bombing. It's amazingly accurate. If we had really intended to hit non-military targets in our Vietnam,
yes,
we could have taken out Hanoi in about 3 days. You know, but we didn't. But be that as it may, they're not current. But let us understand, we know what your intentions are and your motives. What we want to do is, since we have to work together, we want your position to be one that you can sell before the world. You know what I mean? And that's all we're talking about. So we discussed it.
First of all, when we went into Lebanon, the terrorist side. They deliberately put them either into a refugee camp or right outside of a refugee camp. These places were so close to a refugee camp that it was decided not to do something, but to go in. Now, our men had to go in and walk for hours in enemy territory in order to locate exactly each one. And I can tell you this, in this room, even from the Lebanese, we got the statement that it was exact. These were places of terrorists, of all terrorists, and no civilian. But believe me, that night until 3:30 in the morning, my military secretary said, "Our boys are back. Two wounded, one lost an arm and an eye. But I don't know what happened to these men walking in enemy territory over hills for hours in order to reach these places, in order not to touch anybody. Sometimes it happens. But everything is done. And it isn't a question that we have to tell the military to be careful. They themselves are extremely sensitive to this question. I appreciate very much what you have said.
Well, now,
I appreciate mainly in this basis when I say because there's mutual understanding and there's mutual confidence. Mr. President, I'm convinced that if any doubt as to what we want to do with the honors, we wouldn't get it. And the fact that there is this confidence, that what we want is merely to be in the position that of self-defense, and your policy has been proven so right, not only does it give Israel the capability of defending itself, but it has prevented war. It has prevented shooting. If God forbid we had been left weak, I'm convinced there would be shooting across the canal. And if Saddam didn't start shooting, despite all the dates that he said, it's because he knows that we're capable of defending ourselves. And this way your policy has been proven right 100%. It has not only made us capable of defending ourselves when attacked, we weren't attacked because of that. There's been no shooting because of that. This was the primary element in having at least the Egyptian front quiet. So everything was proven right. And what we are interested in now, and again, I have to say one more thing. We've been asked naturally at home and by others now that the Vietnam thing is out of the way, don't you fear that the American government will now become more active in your area? And I said, I don't fear that at all. There's no difference of opinion as to the necessity of trying to do everything which is possible to do in order to have reach a state of peace in the area. The question is how to go about it. The question is what will be done. But we are not opposed to the American government being active in that. On the contrary, there's nothing, we have no differences of opinion on that. The question is how do we go about it? And the appraisal of what the other side means when it speaks about peace and when it speaks about negotiation. Now, as far as we are concerned, Mr. President, you know that our stand has been from the beginning. We haven't changed that. We have negotiations at any time, anywhere. May I take a moment to tell you something that happened last May? A special envoy came from the president of Romania. Romania is the only East European country that has not severed the relationship with us. And he came in, he was the deputy foreign minister, he's now foreign minister. He came for 2 days, and he said he was coming for a talk in the foreign office, but then he came to see me, and he said, actually, this is the reason that I've come to the country. I sent my wife first, and my president was in Egypt, and he met President Saddam. I don't know what he wants to say to you, but he would like to see you. And he asked you, is it possible for you to come to Bucharest? Of course. So I went to Bucharest, official visit, and I spent about Twice during this period, I asked our ambassador to go, and he didn't want ambassadors to know his ambassador in Israel, not ambassador in Bucharest, fine. But I said, will you go and just ask, is there a message for me? Nothing was the subject of the message. Nothing. I'm sure that the Francesco delivered the message to Sadat. He wanted it. He saw this as an important mission for him and for Romania. Nothing happened. So as far as negotiations are concerned, we first thought the direct negotiation. We still believe that that would be the right way. Prepared to go to indirect negotiations. When your government suggested what's called proximity talks, and we are so prepared at any moment that there's no question whatsoever. And then actually there is no difference of opinion in any corner in Israel as far as negotiations are concerned. With Egypt, with any one of the countries. With King Hussein,
two tracks.
insurance has a very strong bargaining position at the moment, and you are. You can look anybody in that order. They all are trying to get you. You lose a deal that you do if the Russians stay out there. No question. And you will continue to be able to continue to for some time. And that's why, frankly, on the one side, you could say, why should we talk? On the other side, however, you look down the road and say, well, maybe you could change. And you go. Now, let us at this time, I would suggest, while you're in a very strong bargaining position, and where for the first time, and I must say it's because you're strong, the Egyptians are approaching us. Rather than us going to them, they're coming to us. And not for the first time. Now let's talk about the Russians quite candidly. The Russians are panning to get some sort of a settlement there. And I think the reason they're panning for it is that they want to get the Egyptian money. Maybe other reasons, but we won't try to judge Russian motives, except that they want something done there for some time. Now, you don't want the Russians in your game. You'd rather have us in your game. You'd like to have the Russians, however, you know they've got to play a role, because they've got to keep their clients from, you know, from breaking loose. So, I would like to try a process where Dr. Kissinger, totally private basis, will explore with the Egyptians what is doable. He will not negotiate with you, understand. But he's got, you will have to let us know the areas that I would understand that you would be able to negotiate with him. You're not going to negotiate the matter, you're going to explore it. Now, the other thing is the same kind of thing be done with the Russians. Not let me tell you what there's also listed, he said. Brezhnev will probably be here sometime this year, We know what the question is, whether it'll be the early summer or the late summer, the early fall. Now, that therefore gives us a reason for us to be able to talk to him on this basis, the Russians or the Korean national. Where, and you know, we didn't have long discussions with them. Never produced anything. Not yet, perhaps.
No. I've always kept.
Well, you know, I've got to, you know, I don't know.
All right, both.
One yeah, and like I said, they haven't produced anything. The Russian position's changed considerably. You remember the talk I had with Romeo and the talk we had with Brezhnev. You thought it was rather significant.
And at that time, they offered to pull their troops out of Tryas. Now, they've been able to.
Now, what we're really talking about here is a game in which you would have to, in which I will tell you about the assurance that Henry will conduct this under my direction on absolutely off-the-record basis. Someone will believe in any event, it doesn't have to leave. You know what the Egyptians are doing all the time. So be that as it may, what we would like to do, what I would suggest is that he can discuss that. Let us see whether there is something. Now, what is the goal? Well, let's say, you know, there's an impact. The Egyptians, on the one hand, say they've got to have an overall settlement before they talk about an interim settlement. And that's the thing. And the other great debate is the question, you want security and they want sovereignty. And so those are insoluble, right? On the other hand, if we could get an interim settlement, I mean, let us face it, that's in your interest, if it's interim. And then leave the other one, and now we're talking in the greatest of confidence, and the most, shall we say,
you answer this question. He said, I have no choice because the only man who can talk for half an hour without saying anything is Kissinger. So then I will say, I have a complaint that you gave away my secret. He said, no, I didn't say half an hour. I said an hour and a half.
Well, what we have, let me tell you why I think this procedure could be helpful. First, there's a chance it might work. Maybe. Second, however, it keeps the action going, and so that they don't confront us with something we don't to have to go into the public area. You see, what I'm concerned about, Prime Minister, is going into the public area, and then get all the eager beavers on both sides do that. Make statement, next day, all of a sudden we'll be in a confrontation. It just isn't going to work. Now, privately, it may not work either. Maybe all we're going to have is this problem today is called, but I think we've got to try. So that's what I would suggest as the line of procedure. If you'll permit it, we won't do it unless you will approve it, because you see, and let me say, we're not a broker for you, but we need to know at least some outlines of what you think we should talk about.
Mr. President, the nice little to the Russians, it's a Churchill speech, I think. And we really want something there. Thank God we're strong with your help. But we don't want to use our strength. And we are anxious for a situation being created in the Middle East where there is real peace. Now, we're anxious that you talk to the Russians and the Egyptians, and what you say now I can only underline. Naturally, not coming to some decision or to come to some agreement at our expense, let us say. Let me put it bluntly.
You don't want an agreement, that's right.
The Egyptians want the United States to deliver Israel. First they thought the Soviets would deliver Israel to them. Now they're pretty much disappointed with the Soviets. Now they want the Americans to deliver Israel to them. But I would have to fear that you're going to deliver us to Israel, that you're going to squeeze Israel. All this terminology that is used by Saddam. And not only that, but I naturally expect that the United States will not take a stand of its own in this matter without consulting us, without us knowing what is happening. That is, that we don't get up one morning and find that the United States and the Egyptians and the United States and the Russians have come to some agreement, and then here it is, and we won't be able to accept it, because it isn't sovereignty that we want. That isn't the main thing. If we say we must have sovereignty in certain areas, it's because we must have security. Who, like Mr. President, would understand that? And the second thing is, what do the Egyptians really want? If the miracle would happen, and they would really want peace with us, and say, this is it, and from now on, no confrontations and no threats, and so we live in peace, that would be the greatest day for us. We know that that isn't what they mean. We know that they speak to their close friends and say they want all kinds of things. They want Israel to go back to the 67th border. They want afterwards to drive Israel to the 47th border. And after that, Israel will have to settle its matters with the Palestinians. Palestinians means Arafat, means terrorists. So we agree that practical approach is this special agreement on Israel. We are prepared. Yes. We've said to you, we say that the line to which we are prepared to withdraw from the Suez Canal is a temporary line. We don't say that this is the final line. The final line is in a peace treaty with negotiation. That will have to be agreed upon between us and the Egyptians. But as an interim agreement, when we say we will step back leave out fortifications and stuff. These fortifications
under the Suez Canal, which is
the Suez Canal is the natural block between us and the Egyptian army. And Sunday when the story will be told, the number of guns on our side and the number of guns on the other side, probably nobody will believe it. This is one of the reasons why it's so essential for us to have an air force, because there's no comparison with the number of guns that they have on their side and we have on ours. We can't afford it. We're not in manpower nor in guns. So when we say we're prepared to leave this, the strongest point that we have vis-a-vis the Egyptians and fortification, we're doing something. We're taking a risk. We're prepared to take a risk for peace. In addition to that, we say, all right, they want to clear the Suez Canal. We agree. We want them to clear the Suez Canal. We want them to operate the Suez Canal in order to have a division of forces, which is not only in talk, not only in agreement, but if the canal is operated, we hope they will begin shooting. We hope they will begin to rehabilitate the people in the towns that have been destroyed on the other side. Bring them back. Normal life there, which again is a guarantee, almost a guarantee, that they won't start shooting again. We say actually if they want to clear the Suez Canal, they will have to bring over some personnel, technicians and so on. We are prepared to say something, which I'm sure that some people in the country would like to chop our heads off for that. Some policemen, there are civilians there, they need policemen there, fine, they can come over. We are even prepared to do something which is difficult for us. If the Suez Canal is open and operates, naturally we should also have the right of shipping. We are prepared in the first stage that they should recognize on principle that we have the right of shipping through the Suez Canal. But we won't use that. We will diplomat allies. We've lived so long without the Suez Canal, we'll try to live a while longer. We are often told you must do something in face saving for Saddam. That's a lot for Saddam saying face saving, he has the canal. And in practice, there's no Israeli shipping. Although on principle he must recognize our right of shipping in the Suez Canal. So it seems to me that in the context of this kind with all these points, that there is something that can be done if they really want it.
And this, Mr. President, has never been negotiated. Proposals have never been formally put to the other side. Well, let me ask this. Should they be?
I'm prepared to go home and fight for this.
Never publicly. You're talking about doing this publicly? No, this is. Well, we have a number of decisions to make. Meet the Prime Minister and I had a long talk yesterday about. She mentioned these points that she was willing to make as Israeli position and contribution to this. We then have this question. We can do it in one of two ways. We can either let the State Department start an interim negotiation procedure, an interim settlement procedure, without putting the specific get the proximity talks going in order to have something going on and keep these positions back. I think it wouldn't be wise for the Prime Minister give those points away.
Well, you could say it'd be reasonable, but I wouldn't tell them off this morning.
I think that would fit it better into our private chat.
I think the advantage of going after, you've got to have something. The State Department's got to be doing something, and of course the Egyptians need something in the public area as well. So but the point is that it seems to me that maybe we're going to cover this, the procedure, the better procedure is to have them move that area, but not.
be lied to, which we will prefer. We will never say in public now that we are prepared eventually to withdraw to the passes. But not one step. But we wouldn't say that, if I may say. I won't say to the State Department now, because then it will be given away.
You've got to be in a position, that's why the private negotiation is better, because you've got to be in a position that you know what you're willing to do, and then you give part, and you end up here. Otherwise, if you say it here, you end up here. That's the way it works.
At this stage, first of all, we don't have to trigger anything for a few weeks, but they will have enough to talk about just discussing procedures and how to get the talks started. That's going to occupy everyone. That's what the state ought to do. The procedure. They'll come to you with a proposal, and undoubtedly they'll come to the Egyptians. Then both sides are going to have proposals, and how this might happen. That will occupy us for a couple of
minutes. And you should be very outgoing on that forthcoming, because those things are not finished.
So the trouble is that the Egyptians, as you said, they want the end before they begin. And that's our principle. We're prepared to discuss them all over peace agreement, but they want before they decide, before they negotiate, to have everything that they want to get. And we've taken the stand all the time that the practical possibility, if at all, is a gentleman.
I talked personally with some other Australians too, and I talked to the Chinese about this. You know, the agreements and so on, of course, their position was very hard on it. There's a window there, it seems to me. Not a very big one, but there's a window. I don't know if you agree on it.
Given nothing in substance, but the strategy of great flexibility and attitude. So now it is all the time. So now it's important for them to see what happens in the next round, if they will put in something in substance, which is really good. And you have now given something in substance, so we know.
The point is, we've got to tell them, which is what I communicated to Ishmael, that he just couldn't sit here. I told him, I said, you can't tell him. I said, we know your position. I said, the basic method for the body is just you can make your speech to everybody makes. And I said, that we're not going to make any progress because we can't have any. He said, we can't have any talks or anything until there's an agreement to withdraw from it. I said, that won't be accepted. I said, now we've got to find something in between. I said, what do you suggest? That's where we have them now. So you see, you've got to get them smoked out as to where they are. But the main point is that you are now having what is your view as to the Russian game.
But we can keep, if we have these Egyptian talks going on, what the Russians will undoubtedly do is to present a very detailed paper. This would get us into the position of maneuvering towards imposing a settlement. On the other hand, Ishmael told me that he doesn't want a detailed Russian position as long as they're talking to us. So we could use the Egyptian talks to say that, but up to the Russians, that we are willing to talk in generalities to them, but that we want to wait to see what the Egyptians come up with, otherwise we'll produce total confusion.
We're in this interesting position at the moment that when we talk to and also when we talked to Brezhnev 6-7 months ago, basically the Russians talked as if they were brokering for, and they were the Egyptians, and they were talking about what they get the Egyptians to do. Now the new situation is that at the moment, that's why I say there's a slight window here. The Egyptians have come to us and say we would rather have to talk to you rather than through the Russians. I overstated.
They said that while they're talking to us, they don't want the Russians to make detailed proposals. And
great powers will sit down and say, well, we worked this out. On the other hand, if we, as the middleman, if we could get Jockey to the position where we talk to both sides, I think you're in pretty good shape because you know how we're going to tell them.
Information that we have is that as well was that Moscow, that the Russians took a stiff line and said, don't give in to the Americans. That was the main
surprise.
Don't give in to the Americans. Don't give in at all. Although I must say the Russians didn't encourage them to go to war. The Russian said to him, look, this is a decision you have to take, but put it in so many words, he said, look, in a war there are shootings, therefore you have to be careful. And on the other hand, he promised, that Brezhnev did, that they would get MiG-23. He invited pilots to come to Russia immediately to begin training with MiG-23.
You always get transcripts of these insurgents.
So
that's why I say you don't need to concern about secrets. You know
we don't need the secrets from you either. But I won't say to make this point that the Russians do not encourage them to first compromise, and certainly they don't encourage them to make any compromise with you.
Part of it may be to put Sadat in the disadvantage if they are always ahead of him. Then, if he doesn't make a settlement, they'll have advised against him.
Exactly.
And they can undermine him that way because they certainly don't like him.
No, they would like to a performance. What they would like is a repeat performance of 57, when actually what we did in 57 was because of the United States, but they take the credit for it. Now they went back to the Egyptians and said, see what we did for you? The Israelis went right back. And they'd like to have a repeat performance of this kind. Therefore they say, for one, don't compromise on anything. And two, by no means should you make any compromise in your talks or negotiations with the Americans.
Right.
And there have been long negotiations, but there were negotiations on prototypes. just haven't been successful. Now we want to go into production. And we need certain, we need help and parts and so on. And here we run into a position where I think so would move. We would like is that the Pentagon should say, now, all right, now you have your prototype. It is successful. Now go ahead. And we'll help you do that. That's one point. The second point, I said before, we never had it so good because what you, the decision that you made with ongoing military delivery, planes are coming in the sky off. But that's till the end of 73 and a couple of months in.
Six months also in
74. What we would like now is to know what's for 74 and 75. Again, without public announcements, I've said over and over again, the only time when the patents appear in the papers is when they are not delivered. As long as they're delivered, nobody says, oh, by. And if you tell us that this will go on for 74 and 75, we plan for 36 and 30 Skyhawks for 74 and 75. If you make this decision, this will remain here among us. And I assure you, nothing will be said in the first place.
Well, as I understand it, Otherwise, this will continue to adhere to maintain the maintenance of the Puglia, to do whatever is required to follow its policy to maintain the balance of power without being specific. What does that mean?
The power thing. Right?
The power thing. Now, second, if I understand you cannot now decide about 1336, let's make here, if we not to go beyond that, that for 74-75 we'll get planes, Skyhawks and Phantoms. I understand that even there is such a recommendation now, and you explore sympathetically at a later stage to meet the requirements of the Prime Minister in numbers.
The numbers are, that's why I say we agree in principle, but that means on your request. Yes, you need the planes. The question is to the numbers, however, we've got your thoughts and we've listened sympathetically and now we'll explore it sympathetically, but let's work out that number and how that's on to you.
You know, I always
get it. You get it! Now about the production.
The production was... I would like.
You want 200? We get 100. Is that fair enough? That I give it.
At least. At least 100, right?
No, I saw the number situation, but let me say that that's a good number, and that's quite a burden on your economy too. So we'll I think 100 is a good number, don't you?
Yes.
And
may I say, the question by not explain what the problem is. What's the problem? The problem is that to get the know-how, we got the know-how for the production of the prototype.
Right.
Second, whatever we do with American company on a business-like basis. The American companies, the American industry is interested.
Right.
Three, we need a certain decision to go and to give us the know-how. We'll be dependent anyhow on certain parts in the future also to get there from the United States. Now, we cannot go on one type of plane to develop all the facilities, to product, to produce to not only 100. Therefore, let's say, at this stage, the decision is at least on 100. You're not committed to more than 100.
Why don't I check this with the Defense Department? We just let them know. I think we can. The primary consequence for us is decision, because we will not be committed, if I understand the Prime Minister, and to more than 100.
At the present, no.
All we are doing with this statement is not to preclude another.
They're not able to accept.
It's a precluded.
Not to preclude it, but
not always, but.
Exactly. That's not to preclude the decision on the later stage for
that we don't find ourselves in a position to say, no, the decision was 100.
At the present it's true, but on the later stage.
It does not mean automatically that you go above the 100, but it is not precluded that after 100, we can come back and say,
it is to say you are not committed to more than 100.
All right, that's good. We'll make that clear to the Defense Department that we're not committed to more than 100. You see, we gave it again.
Thank you. Yes, I just want to say one word about the Russian Soviet Union.
Where'd you give in on 5,000?
No, he said we have to break up soon.
Yeah. They've been a sniper a long time.
push a lot more. And it's like in our conversations with the Russians, it's not
petty cake. It's very direct, very tough. They talk tough to us, we talk tough to them, and we all understand that. And that's why we get along reasonably well. And I can assure you, we discuss these things in the day. But we have also found that with the Russians, if on an issue like this, in my view, it's my political judgment, my diplomatic judgment, that if we put this to them directly on the basis of most favored nations, they'll slam the door down, nobody will come out, and they'll be rougher than they are for the rest of the time. That's the way these people react. Henry, I don't know if you agree or not. And so my view is, I can make you, which I've done, the ambassador, you can be sure that I'm aware. You can be sure that we'll put it to the Russians by the president. But I do not think that it is helpful to your cause. And it's ours, too. This is inhumane treatment for people, period. And just make it whether they're Jews or Romanians or anybody else in history. But, indeed, we've had some experience dealing with these people. And on this sort of thing, on this sort of an issue, I don't think a public confrontation will help. I think it will hurt. I think we've got to stick it to them privately. And then, there are other things that we can take away from them. Like they want wheat, they want this, they want that, or the other thing. They're just little ways that the message gets through. But we've got to say blindly, oh, no, we're not making anything. Right? That's the way we've done it. We've avoided three human confrontations by this sort of approach. We've avoided a couple of other things with the Russians. And I'm just very much afraid, Madam Prime Minister, if this thing continues to escalate, so we've got the whole Congress putting us in a position where our whole, frankly, the whole initiative in dealing with the Russians will rise or fall depending upon what the Russians do about the Jewish community and immigration. If that happens, it's not going to hurt the health of the Jewish community. It will not help. So which is what you want. Now, I want to get them out of there. I think it's horrible. Frankly, I think they're probably doing worse than putting them in with the crazy people. I think the Russians are a savage bunch of people. I'm an ice bait Russians. Sorry. I mean, the communist Russians are good people.
You know, there are tens of cases that they keep a young woman there at the last stages of tuberculosis.
Oh, it's terrible. We know about that case.
And
you see,
there are about 30 cases of this kind.
I think they're capable of everything.
We don't intend that the Russians should come out and say, well, you don't come now on. No ransom, every Jew can go. We know that. But I'm sure that your pressure, and I don't ask you to do it in public.
Well, you see, the public, when I say ask me to do it in public, it puts us here, me, in a very difficult position where senators, of course, most Democrats, and an awful lot of Republicans and congressmen, come out and they say, supported by and instigated by the Israeli government, as well as the American Jewish community, they come out to say the whole Russian policy must cease initially unless they do something about the Jewish immigrant. Now, the ambassador has been very good about this, we know. We want, but you see, if you do that, then the thing could turn the other way, because a lot of people here say, what? We're not going to have progress on salt. We're not going to have progress in these other things because we're making this a condition to it. If it would work with the Russians, I'd do it. But you see the problem?
I understand that, Mr. President.
I have no problem. I can assure you. You'll get results. But if this sort of thing, if the Congress passes something like that, that's going to be very bad.
That's the main problem to prevent, I mean, not to inflame the senators, to put on checks.
You see, I can't say to the Jews of the United States because
you've got to talk about this issue.
I won't say it because it's. Not because I can't say it for any political reason, but I can't say it to the United States. Don't worry about Russian Jews.
I know. Oh, no.
There are three and a half million Jews in Russia.
Oh, yes.
Not all of them will come to Israel. But I know there are 80,000 to 90,000 Jews that have applied. to Israel. And the Russians are fools. Yeah. They could get all the goodwill in the world.
Absolutely.
They're sending.
We told them that. I told Russia.
They do two things which are opposite one to the other. On the one hand, we have now about 45,000 Jews that have come since the middle of 71. Well, that's wonderful. We would praise them to the sky if they would not make their lives miserable. They're defeating their own purpose.
The problem, I don't think, is you shouldn't say anything about that, which is entirely. No, you should. That's up to you. The problem is,
of course, and I understand. I would agree with you.
Yes.
Is whether the senders here who are somewhat friendly, susceptible to influence, whether they could be restrained somewhat from pushing for the Jackson Amendment and similar things, which would be very embarrassing to our whole foreign policy. That is the president's concern.
Yeah, I apply directly to, for us to make progress in the Russian initiative in the long term, I think that Prime Minister is in your hands. The Russians armed as the ambassador knows best for being to the teeth with an awesome nuclear capability. The time the United States could face them down as we did in Cuba is gone because it's mutual suicide, and they know. On the other hand, so therefore our influence must be to the greatest extent possible from within, rather than simply confronting them without. We've got to do both. But you see, for this reason, we think the Russian initiative is important, you see, on the basis that we have a pragmatic, strong self-interest. Because, look, as I said earlier, you, thanks to people like Rabin and others, you get more out of your defense dollars than anybody. You've got the best manpower and skilled people in the world. There's no question about it. I've said that to others that you have not been president. We admire you for it. You can lick anybody, and you will if necessary. You don't want to. You can if they start anything. All right. On the other hand, you can lick anybody except the Russians. We got to keep them on. So you see, that's the game. So what I want to say is, let us develop our Russian policy really in a way that we can influence these people. Now you've, this Russian is a tough cookie. He's basically pretty close to the soil. And I won't go any further than that. Well, you're going to the press club, huh?
No, yes.
You'll murder him. You'll murder him.
Thank you.
They'll be friendly. They'll push you on that plane, and you just, I think what you said publicly has been very good, you know what I mean? You know what I mean when I say they'll push you, they have to ask the question.
Yes, they'll ask.
And you're in a good position to say, well,
they will not be fed.
At the airport, I was, what are they going to do to me?
No. Well, they like you. Mr. Prime Minister, Madam, Ambassador, it's your birthday. Those are some prop links for it, and that's a souvenir for your wife and yourself. Your birthday. Total value of $8. You're not compromising. Here, I'll give you a. But do you have a coat?
No.
So,
no.
I should also. You've been receiving that.